Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks again for joining us this week. On today's podcast, we'll hear from Robert Colangelo, founding farmer and CEO of Green Sense Farms based in Portage, Indiana. Robert will talk about seed propagation, as seed stability is a huge issue right now in the hemp industry. Robert will also talk about the Green Sense Farms vertical farming operation and their involvement in other areas of the ag business as well. We'll also hear from Midwest Hemp Council President and Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose McKinney & Evans, Justin Swanson, to give us an update on current affairs the Midwest Hemp Council is dealing with, as well as next month's Hemp at the Crossroads event in Indianapolis. But first, we'll begin our conversation with Robert Colangelo, again, the founding farmer and CEO of Green Sense Farms based in Portage, Indiana. Robert, we do appreciate you joining us on the show this week.
Jason, thank you. I'm happy to do so.
Well, excellent. Now, Green Sense Farms started as a produce farm selling to consumers, but it's grown into a global entity with facilities and research programs going all over the world. What areas has Green Sense Farms evolved into over the past few years?
Green Sense Farms has evolved into three functional disciplines. We do contract research for controlled environment agriculture. We design and build farms, either indoor vertical farms or combined indoor vertical farms and greenhouses. And then lastly, we operate facilities. So we have operated vegetable farms, plantlet farms, and propagation farms. And earlier this year, we were awarded one of the 100-plus licenses in the state of Indiana. And we started doing some research with Purdue to develop a hemp propagation farm and convert our Portage, Indiana vegetable farm into a propagation facility.
Okay, now you started this back in March of 2014. You're a Chicago native. How did you end up in Portage, Indiana?
It was really simple. The state of Indiana has very business-friendly climate. They offered us a good incentive package. And the cost of production was much less in Indiana than it was in Illinois. And we still had the large Chicago metropolitan market of 9 million customers to serve.
Now, do you see a lot of businessmen from Chicago doing that, going into northwestern Indiana for that reason?
Yes, both business and residential. You know, the state of Illinois has really gotten itself in a bit of a financial crisis, both at the state level and in Cook County, where Chicago is located. And I think it's just become a very difficult tax situation to navigate. And I think Cook County is one of the fastest losing population centers with people migrating out because of that.
Well, certainly a benefit for Indiana, and we will take that. Now, Robert, we talked about you moving from providing produce to consumers to having your fingers in a lot of different things agriculturally all across the globe. But again, what made you decide to go from providing food to consumers to these other areas of operation that you have?
I think it's being able to be an entrepreneur and recognize opportunities and be able to pivot. We have a saying, fast to fail, quick to pivot. When you look at emerging markets, you have to be able to understand where the opportunities are and go towards those. And so even though we started out vertical farming for pure vegetable production, we've learned that there is a real need to do contract research. And we run a large project for a Fortune 500 company. So it got us into the research market. So we're very needs driven, understanding what needs are and being able to fulfill those. And then also seeing a lot of people get into the cannabis industry and the vegetable industry. We recognize that we've developed a considerable amount of expertise in designing and building farms. So we saw that as a natural spinoff, and we've always been operating farms, so we continued that. offering also.
Now, when you talk about vertical farming, which is a big niche for you guys, is that basically greenhouse, building greenhouses for folks?
So I would use controlled environment agriculture as the overarching category of farming indoors. A greenhouse still communicates with the environment. It uses the sun for photosynthesis for the plants, and it also vents to the atmosphere when the greenhouse gets too hot. So greenhouses have a propensity to have a little bit more bugs in them and maybe lower operating costs because they don't have to generate light. They use the sunlight. But greenhouses also have limited production. It's hard to grow in a greenhouse in the winter months. You need to have additional equipment in order to deal with the cold or the heat. And as the seasons go on, there's less sunlight, so you need to add some additional supplemental lighting to keep your production up. An indoor vertical farm is a totally controlled environment. There is no sunlight. The building is tightly sealed, so it keeps pests out, and you're able to grow year-round because you have LED grow lights, and you're able to produce on a weekly basis. So that's probably the big issue, is that an indoor vertical farm uses artificial lighting, and it's able to produce year-round produce consistently because it's not relying on the sun.
And are these available globally or just in the United States or just regionally? How far do you guys reach?
We built a indoor vertical farm in China, and we have another one that we're going to be constructing shortly in French Polynesia. We also have partnered with a Spanish greenhouse builder, Rufipa, so that we can build combined vertical farms and greenhouses, so you get the best of both worlds. Vertical farms are best suited for growing leafy greens or for propagation facilities to grow young plantlets, where greenhouses can grow a much wider variety of vegetables, such as your tomatoes, peppers, and cucumbers. So when you combine both of them, you're able to grow a wider variety of vegetables and still economize on conserving water.
All right, Robert Colangelo, founding farmer and CEO of Green Sense Farms, based in Portage, Indiana. Now, Robert, that sets us up for your entrance into the hemp industry and the hemp market. You mentioned propagation, the propagation of seedlings, clones, mothers. Tell us how you got involved in the hemp industry and what you offer the folks in the hemp industry.
We've worked closely with Purdue University on controlled environment agriculture. There's a number of professors that are real experts in lighting and irrigation and water purification. And when we heard that the state of Indiana was issuing a hemp license, we applied for one, thinking that we would continue using our research facility to explore better ways to grow hemp. So we got our hemp license at the beginning of 2019. We retrofitted the farm to be able to grow hemp, and we got some seeds, grew some hemp seedlings, transplanted those, grew those to mothers, and then cut those and grew clones, and then took the mothers and flowered those. So we were able to prove that we could grow hemp indoors, all different facets, from seedlings, clones, mothers, and flower. And it fit right into our mission of being a R&D facility. And from that, we now are looking to build a compound of a greenhouse, vertical farm, tissue culture lab, and field farm, where we can continue scaling up our propagation production efforts.
And was this more or less a trial and error situation, or did you have folks involved that had experience with hemp? I mean, how did this, how long did the process take you? Were there a lot of pitfalls, or did things go swimmingly smoothly for you?
Yes, 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 and no.
We've heard a lot of that over the last year.
So first, we know and understand the fundamentals of growing indoors in our vertical farm. So we're way ahead of the learning curve, and we know, you know, how to set up the mechanics of the room to grow different crops. What we didn't know was the specific nutrient recipe, the photo period, the temperature and humidity settings, how much CO2 to inject in the room, what levels of dissolved oxygen needed to be in the water. All of those parameters we needed to fine tune. Is there resources out there? Yes, but the challenge in the hemp market is there's a lot of misinformation, and being able to go to people that have scientifically proven cause and effect that could give you a very straight answer, there's a paucity of that information. So we had to do our own testing and be methodical in weeding out variables that didn't work and then prove what did work. And that's, we've been at this for about 10 months, and we're now at a point where we're producing consistent level of crop, and we're ready to scale up and go into production.
And when will you be ready to serve Hoosier farmers with your products?
2020, the goal is to have a small scale production. We could produce somewhere around 25,000 clones a month, and somewhere between 300,000 plus seedlings a month with 288 mothers.
And is that going to be considered a lot or not enough or just a start? How does that rank as far as being prepared for the need from the consumers?
I would put us in a medium level, but our focus is really more on quality at this stage, being able to produce a disease-free, pesticide-free, high-quality crop that the farmers are going to have a high success rate in the field.
All right, and of course they can find more information at greensensefarms.com, but if I'm sitting here and I want to grow in 2020, what do I need to do to get hooked up with Green Sense Farms and get on your schedule and your program and make that happen?
They need to contact our star, Piper Halpin, and contact her. We're right now booking out the farm. Since we have a limited capacity and we are producing high-quality clones and seedlings, we have minimum space, and so we're taking orders right now to be able to sell next spring.
And are folks able to come up and visit the facility in Portage, Indiana?
Definitely. They could give us a call and we could schedule an appointment.
All right. And again, and they can find that information on greensensefarms.com. And of course, there will be a link from the MidwestHempCouncil.com website. And again, we've been speaking with Robert Colangelo, the founding farmer and CEO of Green Sense Farms. Robert, again, there's so much we could get involved in here, but is there anything specifically regarding hemp that we need to discuss today that we missed?
Yes, a couple things is we're working with Purdue, Dr. Langenhoven, Petrus Langenhoven, to develop a propagation standard for the state of Indiana along with the Midwest Hemp Council. We think that a lot of people had been sold either bad seedlings or bad clones last year, mm-hmm. and they didn't have a good success rate in the field. And we think by creating a high quality propagation standards so that people know what they're getting and know what to look for in a clone or seedling will really help the farmers achieve higher yields. And I wanted to make sure that we got that out there. And then secondly, I do host a radio show on sustainability. We are all about sustainability, being able to use field farms, greenhouses, and vertical farms is really the best way that we're going to be able to conserve soil and groundwater, because that's going to be our limiting factor into the future, is that if we are going to feed more people with less inputs, we're going to have to learn how to farm better. And using and integrating those three methodologies is going to help us do that.
And Robert, the podcast that you spoke of, people can find that again on your website, but you guys are syndicated on many radio stations throughout the country.
Yes, we also produce an audio visual Green Sense Minute, which is a short vignette of our best interviews that we also distribute to AP, Associated Press, which gets that out internationally. So if there's any listeners out there that have really good, sustainable ideas, the whole mantra behind the show is it needs to make economic and common sense to make green sense, because that's how we think we can make the world better, is making sure that we've got, you know, market-based ideas that make good sense.
All right. Once again, that's Robert Colangelo, founding farmer, CEO of Green Sense Farms. You can find all this information at greensensefarms.com. I encourage you to go listen to those podcasts. Very informative, all kinds of great information if you have anything to do with the ag business whatsoever. Once again, Robert, we do appreciate you coming on the program, and I'm sure we'll hear from you again soon.
Well, a big shout out to Midwest Hemp Council. We really need organizations like that to grow this hemp industry strong.
Absolutely. And we need people like you involved as well, Robert, putting in all that research and development to advance the hemp industry here. Once again, Robert, thanks, and we will see you soon.
Thank you very much.
All right, now we turn our attention to Midwest Hemp Council President and Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose McKinney and Evans, Justin Swanson. Justin, I understand you're out on the road right now, but we always do appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
No problem. Yeah, I got about 2 hours to kill, so hopefully everyone's ready to listen to that.
All right. Well, we don't need you for the whole 2 hours, but, you know, giving us a few minutes is certainly always appreciated. So let's talk about a couple things you've got coming up here on your agenda. Next Tuesday, the Interim Study Committee on Fiscal Policy. Talk about that. Tell us what that is, what you're going to talk about, and what goes on at the Interim Study Committee on Fiscal Policy.
Sure. So every session, there's bills that do not make it to the finish line and become law. Actually, the vast majority of them do not become law. And summer study committees happen. They're called summer study committees, but they typically start being held late August until November-ish every year. And so if a bill doesn't make it through the finish line and become law, if legislators think that the topic or the issue merits further study or further focus, or, you know, they need more additional information before they decide which way to act on an issue, they'll send it to summer study committee. And this is, again, an area where legislators can dive a little deeper into certain topics. They can call in expert witnesses. And really, it's just an opportunity for a legislator to keep his or her idea on policy alive, at least for the summer or the fall. And typically these summer study committees will issue a final recommendation. Not all of them do that. Some of them do. And on this particular topic for the fiscal policy, they're looking specifically at, do we need to tax CBD products? If we do, what's the rate? How is it collected? Is it at the wholesale, the distribution level, or the retail, point of sale? So we are exploring that with legislators. I'll tell you from the few legislators I've spoken to, there doesn't seem to be a big appetite to do that, to specifically tax CBD oil. And I think the thinking is with some legislators is, do we need to treat this like a vice, have a sin tax like tobacco or alcohol? And that's certainly not what we want to be grouped up into as an industry. We're quite the opposite of alcohol and nicotine, where, we feel the product has potential medicinal benefits. And whether that's backed up by a study or you're just using analogies through everyday Hoosiers, I think the evidence is there, and it's just going to take a little while for the research to pour in and then start coming out and from credible sources.
Well, I think history will show that I don't know that the federal, state, or local government has ever had a problem adding a tax to anything. So who makes that decision, and how is that final decision made?
Yeah, typically, in other states that may be the case. I'll tell you, Indiana does a great job of fiscal restraint. So we're not really ever in a position where we need to go out and look, for revenue, just to look for revenue to shore up our books. And we did have, the state did take in more money than they thought they were going to. So we do actually have some surplus monies available that I think is a strong sign that, hey, we don't need to do this just to go do it to fill the books up. Kind of the more concerning policy aspect, Jason, as I mentioned earlier, is this idea that we need to be treated like a sin industry or a vice industry. And again, that's something we want to avoid, and we do that through education. And typically it's the committee chair has, you know, the most power on these committees, whether it's during session or during a summer study committee. They set the, you know, they set the time limits. They figure out who they want there speaking on a specific topic. So typically it's the committee chair along with a few others who are leading the charge on an issue. And I do not know if they are planning on issuing kind of a final recommendation to the full General Assembly. But I think we're in a decent spot right now as an industry. We just want to make sure we're, again, treated like what we are and not treated like what we aren't.
All right. And again, that's next Tuesday. So we'll get an update from you next week on that. And that's the summer study committee. But, you know, that sounds like something that, you know, we were forced to do in high school that nobody ever wanted to do. So we'll leave that up to you to give us a report on that. But is that open to the public? Can the general public go and witness this and watch this and see what happens?
Yes, absolutely. It is. It's an open public hearing. So if you're interested, I encourage you to go. And obviously it's during the workday, so a lot of people can't make it. So it's also streamed online. So we'll go ahead and put a link to the state website where you can actually, the committee's live stream, so you can watch it from your computer or your phone. So I'd really encourage everybody to follow the discussion. And that way we have some context moving forward on what some possible bills may look like during session.
And what time is that on Tuesday next week?
I believe it's 9:30.
9:30.
It's either 9:30 or 10, and we'll have that the time again up on the website so everyone can know for sure.
Okay, and that'll be on Tuesday, October 15th, and we'll have that link up, I'm sure, either first thing in the morning or Monday night, so people can check that out and not miss that. And again, that's the Interim Study Committee on Fiscal Policy, part of the Summer Study Committee. Now, Justin, let's talk about the big event coming up in November, the Hemp at the Crossroads Education and Trade Show. That's going on the weekend of November 16th and 17th. Again, this is a huge opportunity for folks to find out what they need to know about the hemp industry. And the first day, hemp agronomy. The second day, a full day of business and regulatory issues. Again, folks can get more information on the Midwest Hemp Council website, or they can go directly to hempatthecrossroads.com. Give us another little preview of what we've got coming up and why people want to attend Hemp at the Crossroads Education and Trade Show.
Well, I think we've done a good job of splitting these up on different days. So as you mentioned, the first day is really geared towards the farmers and the guys wanting to put this in the ground or grow it in a greenhouse or work on genetics. And it's really an opportunity for farmers and other people on the on that side of the operation to share some stories, share insights, and really just have an open line of communication, best practices moving forward. You know, Midwest Hemp Council kind of has a philosophy of this is a very early industry and, you know, still building the supply chain. So it's similar to kind of the microbrew movement in the 90s and the 2000s, where you had a couple master brewers who really knew what they were doing and putting quality products out on the market, would actually go around to other brewers around the state and help improve their products that were putting on the market. Because there's an understanding that in these developing industries, it really only takes very little for, you know, one bad product to put a whole black eye on the entire industry, you know, or actually even, you know, set the industry back a couple of years based on the products. So that's kind of our intent with that first day is best practices, you know, share successes,
All right, Justin, I tell you what, Justin, we're having a problem with your phone. And for those who this is recorded, we've had to call you back about five or six times to try to get this happening. It doesn't seem like we're going to get it happening, but if you're still able to hear me there, let's go ahead and just wrap this up. And well, as you can hear, Justin's no longer with us there. But, you know, even though it is recorded, we're just going to let that roll and let that go, because sometimes that's just what we have to do. But again, that was about the seventh or eighth call I had to make to Justin. He's somewhere in southern Indiana working feverishly for the hemp industry. But we're going to go ahead and cut it there and let Justin go. And again, folks, we do want to remind you that coming up tonight, if you're listening to this today, Thursday, October 10th. You still have time to get your tickets for the Dream Nutrition Open House going on tonight from 6:30 to 9:30 up in Rushaville. So if you're anywhere in northern Indiana, you still have time to make that event. Of course, if you're listening to this after October 10th, then the event's already been done, and we will talk about that next week. Another thing going on next Saturday, October 19th, from noon to 7, Elite Health and Wellness will have their open house, and that'll be taking place at the McCordsville location. It'll be a Halloween theme, so make sure and take the kids and head on out to Elite Health and Wellness. That'll be at 5925 West Broadway, and that's in McCordsville. They also have another location in Mooresville, so you can go check that out, but the open house and the Halloween theme is happening at the McCordsville location, and that's next Saturday, October 19th from noon to 7 p.m. Of course, you can find that graphic on the Midwest Hemp Council website. Go check that out. Once again, want to thank Robert Colangelo for joining us today. We also want to thank Justin Swanson for talking with us on the broken cell phone there. And that's going to do it for our show this week. So we certainly do appreciate you tuning in to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney & Evans. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, you can go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, or become a member. Now, thanks for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time, everybody.